I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
One of my chief complaints with this younger generation, I don't know if you call them millennials or Gen Y, Gen Z. I don't know what the hell y'all are. Dana, what generation are you?
Millennial.
Z? You're millennial?
Yes.
And you're under 30. So when does Gen Z begin and end?
I think at 26, age 26. I don't know.
Okay. Well, all y'all after Generation X, I can't stand y'all. And here's why. You have no appreciation for history and how to get things done. You may have an issue with the justice system. You may feel that someone has been wronged, but you have absolutely no decent idea how to go about it. And here is another perfect example. In the past 5 to 10 years, I would say 5 years, there has been this obsession to create an online petition for everything. And you know what online petitions actually change? Nothing. Not a damn thing. Now, they may impact news coverage. They may impact awareness. But in terms of a petition, and a petition is supposed to move an issue from A to B, is an action item. That's why you have people sign the petition. But now, too many young people are using that as the only thing to do, as if they're actually doing something. Now, you might have heard Mark Ronner and other KFI news anchors report on the Tory Lanez guilty verdict and the shooting of rapper Megan Thee Stallion. Well, Tory Lanez, not only his family, but also his extended fan base, have come out in force protesting this verdict. So much so, they have received more than, I would say, 20,000 online signatures for this petition to overturn the verdict or file for an appeal. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I've never gone to law school. But I also know that you can't overturn a verdict or file an appeal via online petition. And no number of signatures to any online petition is going to impact a court case. Now, listen to what the petition has to say, and it's really rich. Quote, Tory Lanez was found guilty of all charges, and it is a true miscarriage of justice. Listen to their supposed reasons why. The state did not prove that Lanez undoubtedly committed any crime. What legal standard is undoubtedly? Reasonable doubt loomed over a 10-day trial as the prosecution was unable to show us, I'm not sure who us is, show us that there were not alternative explanations of the events. A circus of speculation, insufficient evidence, inconsistencies, and drunken memories left us without much moral certainty of any truth. Meanwhile, the jury selection itself may have put him in a terrible position to begin with. If the prosecution believed their victim's account, why was Tory not charged with attempted murder and kidnapping? Instead, gave lesser charges that they were still unable to prove without a doubt. Prove without a doubt? In what court? He now faces almost 30 years in prison and deportation. No, he faces almost 22 years and deportation. E.J. King is the only witness who gave a clear and concise testimony. We literally witnessed every other testimony filled with inconsistencies and contradictions. Who the hell wrote this, Twala? Who the hell wrote this? Who actually believes that that is going to positively impact Tory Lanez or in some way change the trajectory of his sentencing?
The exact same people who for some reason or other believe hashtag anything creates laws or creates bills or somehow a hashtag anything has any substantive relevance in the world.
There was not one legal principle in this complaint, this online complaint. If you just want to have an online screed and complain about the verdict, got it, understand it. But if you're trying to present it as some sort of rebuttal to a case to argue for grounds for an appeal, that is stupid beyond stupid. But that's where we are. And I blame you, Eric, because it's your generation.
Well, for clarification purposes, millennials are born from 1981 to 1996, and Gen Z is anybody 1997 and on. So
you're
I'm a millennial.
Okay. And Mark Rauner is
X.
Okay. All right. All right. Just want to make sure. I got to blame someone. And
someone has to get this blame. Someone's got to get this blame.
Okay. Tory gets all the blame for shooting Meg.
And that's what it comes down to. And I know a lot. Let me back up. I firmly believe we need to teach more civics, personal financial management, and law, basic law in schools. We don't teach it. And so you have these ignorant adults coming out and being mad at the world, and they have no idea how their government works, how the judicial system works, and how the intersection of those two work.
Yes. Yes.
And it's going to get worse because tens of thousands of people signed this petition expecting it to go somewhere, expecting it to make a difference, expecting it to possibly get Tory Lanez out of jail. He shot that woman. That's not even in doubt. He shot that woman. But here we are. People are mad because they don't believe that justice had prevailed when they have no idea even what voir dire is, how jury selection is supposed to go, you know, how peremptory challenges work. They understand none of this. They don't even understand how to file an appeal.
And they're also taking all of the information coming out of the courtroom from people that were there. This case wasn't broadcast on live TV like the Johnny Depp case or O.J. Simpson or anything like that. This is all getting passed down through people that were in the courtroom, and who knows what type of biases those people have.
Not only is it telephone trained, they're assuming that whatever they heard in the courtroom was in front of the jury. Not everything which is said in the courtroom is said in front of the jury. Some information is excluded. Obviously, some evidence is inadmissible, and it's up to the jury to believe or disbelieve any of the witnesses.
I would like to know what the alternative facts of the story are. If Mr. Lanez, I don't know if that's his last name, but if this young man was in possession of a firearm and his firearm went off and hit Miss Stallion, if that is her last name, in the foot and the pinky toe.
In the pinky toe.
If that's what happened, then yeah, he's at fault. If she says it was in an aggressive manner and she felt threatened, well, damn it, then you're going to jail, sir.
And they said in their BS online petition that they didn't try to charge him with attempted murder. No, because that wasn't the charge. You have to be able to prove intent.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that Tory Lanez was trying to murder Megan Thee Stallion.
But I don't think it's in doubt whether he shot her.
Yeah. He had the gun.
It went off.
Yeah. Allegedly, what happened was he was pointing the gun at the ground and shot the ground and said, dance. And therein lies bullet fragments in her feet.
So he's basically just guilty of being a fan of Western films and nothing more.
And being an idiot.
Dance, you varmint. Oh, yes, you know, dance.
You know, and I think unlawful discharge of a firearm and reckless endangerment, whatever else they charge him
details,
with.
Details, details.
Yeah, look, all of those things carry, from our understanding, hefty fines.
Yeah, and also prison time. KFI AM 640. This is the John and Ken Show. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. As usual, we want to close out with some entertainment. And the biggest movie story is still Avatar, The Way of Water, but not only because of the movie itself, but because of the commentary by James Cameron, its director, and how he still has this axe to grind with superhero movies. And he's made it very clear that he's not a fan of the genre, but more importantly, I don't think he's even seen any of the movies in the genre. His latest statement is as follows, that the problems, quote, the problems that they're facing in terms of his characters in Avatar, the problems that they're facing are real, close quote, as to suggest the problems faced by characters like Iron Man or the Falcon and the Winter Soldier or Ant-Man are not real or less real. And given that Avatar and also Avatar The Way of Water takes place in a galaxy far, far away on a planet that no one has ever seen, does not exist, we've never met. And given that the whole premise of Avatar is you have this formerly human consciousness existing in the body of some sort of alien, it's really a stretch for him to complain about superhero movies and their characters not facing real problems, but his characters are.
Yeah, that's pure hate.
Let's go through it, because if you've seen the first Avatar movie, the central problem is that the Na'vi, the indigenous people, mm-hmm. are being attacked by humans, Earthlings, because they want access to the natural resources of the planet, and it's all under this tree, basically. And they're willing to kill everything and everyone to get to the natural resources. Okay. That's semi-real, but that's not more real than maybe Ant-Man's character, who is trying to stay out of prison so he can care for his daughter, and he has trouble trying to keep a job.
Iron Man, who Tony Stark, who is dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome and dealing with a trauma from being in a wartime accident.
Don't forget dying from a nuclear isotope in his chest.
That alone. You have so many different things that these individuals were dealing with on a realistic level. When you go to, as you said, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, dealing with an individual who is an army veteran who became a hero, who was then hunted by the law, and then once saving the world, could not get a loan to save his family business. Wow, that's not real life for you.
And I brought in someone from the KFI news department, Aaron Ben Mosh, who not only loves movies, but has seen Avatar, The Way of Water, and can give at least some reference point. I haven't seen it yet. I do plan to see it. But I get the sense that when James Cameron says that the problems that his characters are facing are more real than the superhero genre, I get the sense that this guy doesn't even look at any of the movies other than his own.
I mean, to be fair, he's been making the same movie for 13 years and he totally missed the MCU and everything they've put out.
So. Oh, damn.
So, I mean, to his credit, you guys, he's been really busy.
Avatar The Way of Water has done respectable numbers, if only because it has been released in China, and that has helped it in its attempt to get to $2 billion. I still don't think it's going to get there. I think it's at like $860 million worldwide.
Worldwide, yeah.
Worldwide. But I'm not hearing anyone who says they may love the visuals of the movie. But I haven't heard anyone tell me they loved the movie.
There's nothing, and look, he'll even tell you, there's nothing original about this movie. You could say, oh, he took bits of this, he took bits of this. He basically redid the plot of Avatar and just created
it in water.
Again. Right. But not even that. Like, this story takes place like a decade or so after the original, and there are new threats coming to Pandora, and they're the same threat from last time. It's still American or U.S. or like Earth. You know,
it's Earth, U.S.
Yeah, it's Earth, basically American, because they don't come from anywhere else. But they're all coming to Pandora to kind of conquer it again. So now new groups of people have to learn the land. Doesn't that sound familiar? While our family of heroes are going to the water because they have to leave for the safety of Pandora. So, like, while we're also learning the ways of water, we're also learning the ways of land, which is kind of what the first one was.
With the exception of maybe the 1600s, where you had colonialism and different types of hegemony, the people of the day are not dealing with the same problems in America in 2022 as what the Na'vi are dealing with. You know, to call those problems real is to suggest that we're still living in colonial America if we're trying to fight off these foreign invaders.
I think the biggest critique I have of the second Avatar is that it's really just stuck in 2009. Like, it did, like, James Cameron is obsessed with environmentalism. He's obsessed with this idea of we must, you know, own up to our failures and, like, help indigenous people in the United States. You can't say that he does that.
But let me jump in there. He basically mocks indigenous people with his depictions, I would say, of the Na'vi.
Oh, 100%. And I think both are true at the same time. He has a fascination with this idea. And in his own life, he's trying to help them. But when he depicts them, they're very, like, stereotypical and things that we've seen in past times. And it's just very interesting to me that like, his idea of conflict is still, like, the colonialism elements rather than, like, the environmental elements of climate change, which is very present in a lot of stories now. And that's a big cause for him. There's, like, one of the most compelling moments of the movie is just a tiny glimpse. And I would have wanted to see that be the larger villain of the second one rather than the same U.S. military coming in to ruin the day, so to speak.
You got a second to hang around for one more segment, because on the other side, I want to talk about the movie industry more broadly, because if James Cameron wants to, again, defecate on the superhero genre, he needs to at least take sight of the fact that there is no movie industry without the superhero genre as we know it. There is no movie theater to go to if we don't have superhero movies. Can you do that for me?
Yeah.
Twala, you going anywhere?
Yeah. No, okay, I'm here for it.
Eric, you going anywhere?
I'm here. Let's go.
Not till 6.
Okay. All right. And Mark Ronner, I know he's not going anywhere because he's getting ready to give us the news from the KFI 24-hour newsroom.
This week at Safeway, enjoy big savings with the BOGO sale, where select items throughout the store are buy one, get one free. With this week's BOGO sale, get select meats like Signature Farms 90% lean ground beef or boneless, skinless chicken breasts or thighs, buy one, get one free. Plus, select fresh produce items like 1 pound containers of sweet strawberries or containers of blueberries or buy one, get one free. Safeway, come in and explore and see what other deals you can find.
Pop quiz. This is for Eric or Mark or Twala or Aaron. Name me a hit movie since 2020, not named, I should say box office success. Let me be clear. A box office success since 2020 and not say Top Gun Maverick.
Dunkirk.
No,
that wasn't.
I don't know. you guys are the movie people. I'm the sports guy.
I'm being very serious right now.
Yeah, that's not a superhero movie.
That's not a superhero movie.
Yeah, because the only ones I can think
Top
of
Gun. That's it. Top Gun and everything else is a superhero movie.
That's right.
Yeah,
I'm quite sure there's a Fast and Furious movie in there which did decent, but not great.
No, did not do superhero movie great.
No, it did not.
The Fast 9, I think it was.
It was whatever the last one was. It did not do great. Not in comparison to
superhero movies.
Yeah.
Horror films always clean up, so Halloween probably did well.
No, it did well in terms of multipliers, but not an overall box office. It wasn't like it grossed $500 million.
No, like it cost $16 million to make, and it made like $200 million.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's successful for that, but no, sir.
Not on the level of these big box office, just box office spectacular movies. Not one. I can't think of one that's comparable.
2020 doesn't really count because no one went to the movies.
But that is my point, actually. Yes, no one went to the movies. So the only reason we still have movie theaters
is because of superhero movies. Because you had Morbius. You had Spider-Man, but even the James Bond one was not successful. Yeah. People may have liked that final one, but it wasn't a success.
Not on the level of these superhero movies.
Because it paled in comparison to Morbius, which was a horrible movie, but it was a superhero movie, so everyone went to go see it. And Venom 2. Venom 2 did really well. Another horrible movie, superhero movie that kept the lights on.
Now, if James Cameron, and I don't think he understands the distinction between an MCU movie and a Sony Universe movie, if he wants to point at movies like Morbius or Venom, Carnage, and say, that is why I don't like the superhero genre, then I'll hear that discussion. But to out of hand dismiss the whole genre and not understand the finer points of this movie or that movie and just want to badmouth the genre as a whole, that just says to me that you're just bitter for no reason. You had Titanic, you had Avatar, you've had tremendous success in what you do, with the exception of Terminator, Dark Fate, and what have you. But these are just as good as any other movie from a fantasy standpoint, from a sci-fi standpoint, and they are, in a way, single-handedly keeping your business alive, James Cameron. If not for superhero movies, there would not be some 4,500 theaters for Avatar to be in this week right now.
I have to ask, where does James Cameron get off dumping on superhero movies when he spent years of his own time trying to develop a Spider-Man movie?
Maybe that's why, though. Maybe that's why he's so bitter.
Is it sour grapes?
But I mean, he's not the only filmmaker in the last year who's complained
Tarantino, right. But at the same time, James Cameron is coming from, I think, from a very different standpoint, because he has enjoyed box office success in a way that Quentin Tarantino and definitely Martin Scorsese have not. So there's really less of a reason for, because those directors, I believe, are saying like, hey, you know, we're actually, you know, auteurs. We are film directors. There's more intellectual heft for our movies. You know, you shouldn't be looking at that other stuff. James Cameron can't make that argument.
But also, it's so interesting that he's saying that, because he has never been like the story guy. He's never been the critically acclaimed guy. He's always been the, I really am fascinated in making the next big cinematic advancement so that other people can use that technology for their own films. Like, that's his guy. Even in the first Avatar, he was like, I don't care about the movie. I just want to make something that has never been seen before.
But as a filmmaker, I see him as, once his success can't be argued, but as far as quality of films, he's one step above Michael Bay for me.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. I feel you on that.
In terms of story, there's nothing great in anything that I've ever seen from James Cameron, with the exception of maybe the original Terminator, with the exception of that.
People say Terminator 2 and Aliens 2 are some of his best work.
Terminator Aliens 2 is hands down the greatest thing he's ever done, but also he wasn't in charge of writing that.
Yeah.
So the films that he did not write, they were visually good.
But I just think it's really weird how he can compartmentalize how his action sci-fi is acceptable and worthy of being lauded, but superhero movies, that genre, given the advances in CGI, given the advances in special effects as a direct result of these movies that he's actually benefited from himself in a way for his movies, I don't see how he doesn't see that, hey, they've actually saved your industry.
Mm-hmm. It's also possible that he's just saying whatever he can say to get people to go see his movie.
Create a buzz.
Maybe, but that's turning me off. That's just me. I can't speak for other people. That just seems like you're just a hater, James Cameron.
Perhaps. But also, a couple weeks ago, even before the movie came out, he said he needed to make $2 billion in opening weekend so that he could make a profit, which is crazy. And people went to go see the movie.
But he's not going to get $2 billion. I don't think this movie's going to make $2 billion.
He's not going to get $1 billion. At 800-something
I think he'll get $1 billion because of China. because of the international markets altogether.
But the international market is already slowing down.
Yeah, but he'll get another $140 million, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Well, put it this way. Regardless, that's a lot. We agree that he ain't getting the $2
billion. Look, Megan is coming out this weekend, and that's already going to stall any further movement for this film. Yes, it is still going to China, but the numbers are going down. They're not going up in China or overseas.
Yeah, and we said that he'll have fewer screens to see it because as other movies come out, they will move out.
He's got two coming out. He's got Puss in Boots and he's got Megan. Both of those are going to take away from any further success for the film. The film may drop down to the top three, but now it's going to start inching along in its way to getting to $2 billion or to $1 billion, period. Word of mouth in the U.S. already is like, don't waste your time unless you've got time to burn.
But like I said, the winter weather is going to have an adverse effect on the movie.
On the entire East Coast, yes.
Wait, but the winter storm already happened, and it didn't stop people from seeing the movie, which is crazy.
No, but you need to have repeat viewings.
Sure.
To get to $2 billion. It's not just seeing it once. You need to see it, like with Black Panther and other movies, we saw it multiple times. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be just once because, you know, the ticket prices may be more, but still, you're going to need to have those repeat viewings. And I don't think there will be enough desire to see that movie twice.
Although I will say there are people who didn't go see movies on Christmas because of the storm, but they have said that they're going to go this weekend for New Year's.
Okay. So give me one more week.
So it is possible.
No, but see, also this week, Wakanda Forever came back. Mm-hmm. And again, you've got two new movies coming out. So two new movies that people really want to see. They're putting a lot of promotion behind Puss in Boots. The promotion behind Megan has been through the roof. It's been insane. I don't see horror movies and the movie looks stupid to me, but people will go see that.
Also, I'm so surprised how well Puss in Boots has made. Like, people are coming up to me. Someone said that it was like the Logan of the Shrek universe.
Can you believe sure it has a better Rotten Tomatoes score than Avatar?
It does. It's doing really well. People are saying this is a crazy movie. This is how you
evolve. Well, that's bad news for Avatar.
But like, can you believe a fourth sequel? I did not pay attention to that.
A spinoff of a spinoff of a spinoff.
And yeah. Everyone's raving about it. And it did better than Babylon, which is, you know, like Hollywood bait. It's Oscar bait. And it did not do well. I'm so shocked by that.
Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of movies that didn't do well that end up with Oscars regardless, you know.
Yeah.
That is true. That is true.
This is the John and Ken Show. KFI AM 640, Mo Kelly in for John and Ken. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. During the break, it was almost simultaneous. I was hitting what they call the talk back button to talk to Eric. And he was trying to talk back to me to say the same thing about our horrible Lakers, who actually happened to be up going into the fourth quarter against the Orlando Magic, who are also horrible.
Worst team in the league, I believe. Or one of them.
Well, yeah, until they beat the Lakers, then the Lakers will officially be the worst team in the league.
But I still think the Pistons have a worse record than us.
Yeah, but didn't they beat us once?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my point. I mean, just because we may have a better record, it's a worse team if only because the Lakers lose to the worst of the league.
It's so frustrating because everyone plays up to try and beat the Lakers because they're the Lakers. But then the Lakers decide to play down to their competition's level and end up losing.
Well, there are a couple of things. There's how bad the team is playing, and there's how poorly the team was constructed.
Yes.
How do you have 12 players and none of them are actual shooters? None of them.
How do you have the majority of the team be under 6'4 when the majority of the league is over 6'7?
Well, how do you have a team which is, they used to be the oldest team in the league, and now they're younger, but they get injured just as much.
You stumped me with that one.
Because you would think something should get better if they got younger, and they got better not at all, in absolutely no way.
Yeah, you would think.
Now, this is what I talked about when LeBron first came to L.A., and I talked about it with Tawala. I said, look, this is a trade-off. Yes, LeBron, you're going to get at least one good year. Maybe you might get a title, but just like the end of Kobe Bryant's career, you're going to trade it off because of salary cap limitations or the specter of that player's aura hanging over the organization and making personnel decisions. Because even though LeBron and Kobe didn't necessarily say, I want so-and-so, or maybe they did, every
LeBron definitely said he wanted Russell Westbrook.
Right. Every trade is run through them. You know, they're not going to get someone to say, hey, LeBron, we just did this without consulting you.
There's a reason LeBron has a nickname, LeGM.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have a poorly constructed team which can't shoot, which can't stay healthy, and can't win.
And can't defend when their best defender gets hurt.
How does a team give up 51 points in one quarter? How is that even possible?
I've never seen that before. I've watched the NBA. I'm 28 years old. I've watched the NBA my entire life. I saw all of Kobe, everything. I've never seen that before.
Back in the 1980s, the Denver Nuggets, I can't remember, but if you look it up, maybe Michael Crozier remembers. I think it was a Paul Westhead team, the Denver Nuggets. They had like a rule that they would shoot inside of like 7 seconds in the 24-second clock, and they averaged like 140 points a game. I have to look
it
up.
Is that Denver?
I think it was Denver.
Why does that sound like Phoenix to me?
No. It was
the 7 seconds or less offense.
Yeah, those 7 seconds less offense, but it was a different team that averaged like 140 points a game, and I want to believe it was in the 90s, and I believe it was Denver. We'll have to look it up. And they just shot as quickly as possible. And, of course, they didn't win many games.
Well.
But I'll find it, you know, after the show's over. But my point is, yes, there's probably a team which gave up 50 points in a quarter, but they weren't an overall bad team. It was probably in the flow of, yeah, you don't play much defense, but the Lakers don't play much offense.
Yeah, I believe the Lakers were outscored in that quarter 51 to like 28.
And they were winning in that game.
Yes, they were. Yes, they were. The Lakers find a new way to lose, it seems like, every week. Because they've had 20-plus point leads in multiple games and end up giving up those leads, and they will end up losing.
It's so weird how the salt and tears can taste so sweet.
Oh.
Wait.
You have no room to talk, Crozier.
Crozier, if you don't know, is a Clippers fan, and the Clippers are an organization which has never won anything, ever. Ever.
I will say the new construction of the arena does look pretty cool.
And they didn't win that. They bought that. They've won nothing. It could be a cool arena, but they still have won nothing. They haven't.
Have they played the Lakers this year?
In the regular season, yes. Yeah.
And did they win or lose?
They won those games.
So they did win something.
Wait.
Well, I'm sorry.
By that measure, the Lakers have won something.
Wait. Let me finish my point. Keep going with the losses, and then the Lakers won't even have the playoffs to worry about. So what are you talking about?
I'm talking about
right now.
Are the Clippers going to have the playoffs?
I've been able to talk about right now for how many years? How many years
every
has it been
year.
Since? How many years has it been since you've been able to talk about right now? Or you just
what,
keep
2 years?
Going back to the past?
2 years? World championship?
2 years?
But are the Clippers even
so
going to make the playoffs?
Now you're saying there's a certain length of time that needs to be applicable.
No, I'm saying the Clippers have never won anything other than a regular season game.
Oh, now we have addendums to it. Because before it was, they've never won a thing.
Well, no team
a thing that means something.
No team has gone 0-82, Michael.
Well,
come on now.
Well, yeah, that's right. And if they did, they certainly wouldn't get into the playoffs. So the games do mean something.
But the Clippers did lose like 73 in 1 year.
Oh, so we're going to keep going back.
Yeah, because there's no future for you guys.
There's a present where you guys are losing, but you don't want to talk about that.
Is Kawhi healthy?
Huh?
Is Kawhi healthy? Is he playing? Is he showing up to work?
I don't know. Is he?
No.
Are they winning?
He has the last
Are they
couple
winning? Yet they still beat the Lakers?
You are lucky Mark Thompson is here. You are lucky.
Just in general principle, you're lucky, I mean.
Mark, what's coming up tonight on the Tim Conway Jr.
I've got a couple of treats for you. One of them is we'll talk about the cold weather and the rain and the wet, but Gene Baxter. Do you know who that is, Gene Baxter? He is Bean Baxter from Kevin and Bean. Remember Kevin and Bean?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so Kevin and Bean, they were a dominant morning show. They, they threw in the headphones, and Bean threw it all in. I mean, the whole shooting match, and moved to the United Kingdom. He moved to London.
I'm not bad at that.
And Bean, you just need to know this, is a British citizen as well as being an American citizen. So he moved. So now he's living over there as a Brit. But he's come back here because of health issues with family and blah, blah, blah. And now we'll have him on tonight. And I'm going to ask him about leaving the millions of dollars he used to make doing that morning show and going over and living in the cold and the fog and the rain of London doesn't make any sense.
Wait. You can make millions in radio?
Yeah. They're a handful at the top. Talk to Big Boy. Talk to Ryan Seacrest. They're there. Talk to Handel.
Handel makes that much money?
Spread the rumor.
Tim Conway Jr. Show coming up next with Mark Thompson. KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
More Than a Movie is back with Season 2. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. And each week, I'm going to talk to the people behind your favorite movies. From The Godfather, Andy Garcia.
He has the smarts of Vito, the temper of Sonny, the warmth of Fredo, and the coldness of Michael.
To the legend behind La Bamba, Lou Diamond Phillips.
When I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Listen to More Than a Movie on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.